Welcome to episode 38 of the New Testament, Gospels and Epistles. I'm Father Ron Shibley, founder and director of the Anglican Internet Church and creator of this series. With this episode, I continue our discussion of unique miracles or signs found in the Gospel of St. John. The underlying spirituality, that is, versus a literalist, historical, academic style, of St. John's narrative of these incidents is another unique characteristic of the Gospel of St. John. The focus of this episode is the last of the two unique signs in the Gospel of St. John, part two of two in our discussion of the healing of the blind man and the raising of Lazarus. One of the consistent themes of the Gospel of St. John is the spiritual concept of Jesus as light versus the darkness of the world. In chapter 9, verse 5, during the dialogue leading up to the healing of the blind man, Jesus speaks one of the I am, Greek ego eimi, sayings that are unique to St. John's Gospel. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Later in this series, I will discuss other examples of the light versus darkness theme. While the actual healing of the blind man was the focus of episode 37, in this episode, the focus is on spiritual blindness versus literal blindness. And I'll illustrate that in the dialogue between the healed blind man, his family, and the Pharisees, and afterward, Jesus' summary remarks directed both to the man, to all who were listening, and to the Pharisees. The Pharisees argued that since Jesus healed on the Sabbath, he was, by definition, a sinner, and therefore could not have come from God. They doubted the blind man's claim of being blind from birth. St. John lets the Pharisees indict themselves by their own words. The obvious intent was to trick the blind man into saying something which would be discredited as blasphemous. They ask, "What do you say about him because he opened your eyes?" in verse 17a. They were quite literally disappointed by the answer in 17b, "He is a prophet." Disappointed by the failure to induce the man to say something blasphemous, they turn to the man's parents and in verse 19 say, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he see?" The parents stand their ground. "We know that this is our son, that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself." That's verses 20b and 21. And just as an aside, the Hebrew age of consent at that time was 13. The Pharisees piously invoked Hebrew tradition with a command, "Give God the glory," and then declare in verse 24b, "We know this man is a sinner." The blind man is not intimidated by their display of piety, and in verse 25 he rejoins, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." Undaunted, the Pharisees make another demand, intended to induce a blasphemous statement, when they ask in verse 26, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" The blind man's statement in verse 25 about being blind and now he sees became part of Christian musical tradition with the publication in the United States of John Newton's hymn Amazing Grace in 1779. There is a suggestion in the tone of his reply that the healed man was impatient with the Pharisees. In verse 27, he says, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples?" The Pharisees strike a righteous pose. "You are his disciple. We are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." That's 28 and 29. The healed man will not back down. Why this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes? Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone who opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. That's verse 30b, 31, 32, and 33. The self-righteousness of the Pharisees reemerges in their response to the man's refusal to back down. In verse 34a, they say, "You were completely born in sin. Are you teaching us?" We rely on St. John's narrative to tell us what happened next. "And they cast him out," meaning of the synagogue. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" Verse 35. The healed man replied in verse 36, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" St. John quotes Jesus' reply and the blind man's response. "For you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." For those viewers who have not seen the episodes on the I Am sayings in the Gospel of St. John, please note that here Jesus did not use the Greek ego eimi, I Am, declaration. The healed blind man replies in faith in verse 38a, "Lord, I believe." And in verse 39, St. John says, "And he worshiped him." And Jesus said, speaking not just to the man, but to all who were listening, including the Pharisees, in the rest of verse 39, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may be made blind." St. John gives us another glimpse into the thinking of the Pharisees who were witnesses to this discourse. He quotes them in verse 40, "Are we blind also?" And Jesus' reply in verse 41, "If you were blind, you would have no sin, but now you say, 'We see,' therefore your sin remains." The sin of the Pharisees is spiritual blindness. In the presence of the divine, they deny his divinity. As the blind man had said, only one sent from God could have done what he did. In other gospel accounts, Jesus refers to those who had ears and did not hear. In this account, they have eyes but do not see. Again, for those who have watched earlier episodes, please note that this encounter with the Pharisees was followed immediately by the "I am the door" and "I am the good shepherd" declarations in John chapter 10. I turn now to the fifth and final unique sign in the Gospel of St. John, the raising of Lazarus in John 11, verses 38 to 44. This Lazarus was the brother of Jesus' friends Mary and Martha of Bethany, who also feature prominently in the Gospel of St. Luke, and is not the poor beggar in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. The event occurs in the days just before his entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. The illustration is an egg tempera and gold leaf work on a wooden panel in the Byzantine style by Duccio Buoninsena of Siena between 1310 and 1311. Siena was then an independent republic and is now a city in the Tuscan region of Italy. The color of Jesus' garments, red and blue, are more typical of the style that emerged in the West after Duccio's lifetime. Only about a dozen and a half examples of Duccio's work have survived. The facial features are clearly Western rather than Semitic, as in the Eastern style. The story of the raising of Lazarus is not used in the Gospel reading cycle for Holy Communion in the Book of Common Prayer. It appears instead in the lectionary cycle as the second lesson for evening prayer on Friday in the second week of Lent. Other denominations give the story a more prominent place in the communion service cycle. The details of Jesus' friendship with Mary and Martha and the circumstances of his presence in their home at Bethany just outside Jerusalem was discussed in detail in episode 35 in the 10th example of the I Am sayings, I am the resurrection and the life. Lazarus had been dead for 4 days when Jesus arrived. As I noted in episode 35, Hebrew rabbinical tradition taught that after 3 days the soul was beyond being brought back by any means. John's account offers great detail, unlike the synoptic gospels, revealing the emotions of Jesus. Here are two examples. In verse 33b, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And finally, in verse 35 and 36, he wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." I will discuss John's emphasis on Jesus' human emotions in a later episode. The Pharisees could not resist making a sarcastic taunt. In verse 37, they say, "And some of them said, quote, 'Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind have also kept this man from dying?'" St. John wrote that on the way to Bethany, Jesus had said to the disciples in verse 11 of chapter 11, "Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go there to wake him up." He then told the disciples in verse 12, "Lord, if he sleeps," then his disciples said in verse 12, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well." And St. John tells us in verse 15 that Jesus said to them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him." Between that scene and Jesus' taking up the challenge laid down by the Pharisees in verse 37, John tells of an incident much like St. Luke's account of Jesus visiting Mary and Martha and finding them in disagreement in Luke 10, verses 38 to 42. In both St. John's and St. Luke's version, Martha remained unquestioning in her faith in Jesus. In St. John's Gospel, Mary, in her grief, said Jesus could have saved Lazarus by coming sooner in chapter 11, verse 32. Part of Jesus' reply was the 10th I Am declaration, "I am the resurrection and the life," but also included this statement to Martha in verse 25, "He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live." This will be important later in the scene at Lazarus' tomb. St. John reports another display of Jesus' emotions, reporting that Jesus was groaning in himself, in verse 38, when he reached the sealed cave where Lazarus was buried. When he instructed Martha to have the stone rolled away, Martha was hesitant, declaring, "Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he has been dead 4 days." Jesus' reply to Martha is a reference to what he said to her and to her affirmation that, yes, she believed, which was reported in John 11, verses 25 and 26. And now verse 40, "Did I not say to you that if you believe, you would see the glory of the Lord?" Throughout St. John's Gospel, more clearly than in any of the other synoptic Gospels, except perhaps in St. Luke's account of Jesus in the temple at age 13, Jesus asserts that in all that he did, he depended upon his Father. The point is made again in Jesus' prayer to the Father in front of the tomb of Lazarus, which John reports in chapter 11, verses 41b, 42, and 43b. And I have elided out some of the narrative to make it a complete sentence. "Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. Lazarus, come forth." In Duccio's painting, he depicts what happened next. Lazarus appeared, wrapped in grave clothing, including the cloth around his head, and Jesus instructed those present in verse 44b, "Loose him and let him go." Duccio shows the man who is closest to the cave entrance with his hand against his mouth and nose, perhaps suggesting skepticism that the risen Lazarus would not stink of death. Martha, clothed in red, kneels at the feet of Jesus. Mary, with the company of the Jews who had come to comfort her behind her, is at Jesus' left. St. John writes that, quote, "many of the Jews who had witnessed this event, quote, believed in him, but that others went away to the Pharisees and told them the things that Jesus did." The illustration on this slide is a circa 1630 oil on panel by Rembrandt. Painted in the rational-minded post-Renaissance era, the style is distinctively Western, with the tomb in the ground rather than the Eastern manner shown by Duccio in a cave. It does not capture either the scriptural detail or the sense of spirituality so evident in Duccio's 14th century pre-Renaissance version. Next time, in episode 39, I will briefly discuss the differences in the details between St. John's account of the feeding of the 5,000 and the story as told in the Synoptic Gospels, and I will follow that by part one in a discussion of themes, details, and incidents which are unique to the Gospel of St. John. Thank you for joining me for episode 38 of the New Testament Epistles and Gospels. This internet-based ministry is entirely supported by public contributions and book sales. You can help in several ways by making a donation in any amount payable to the Anglican Internet Church and sending it to our business office address, 7162 South Wind Lane, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. Or you can purchase any of our books through my author page at Amazon.com, specifically https://www.amazon.com/author/Ronald-E-Shibley. Or you can like us and subscribe to our podcast at our Podbean site, which hosts our extensive collection of over 400 MP3 podcasts on a variety of topics, and which can be heard at or downloaded to computers, laptops, smartphones, tablets, and other portable devices. While you are at our YouTube page, join our Google Plus circle by clicking the subscribe button. As a Google Plus member, you'll receive notice of each new video. And please note that Google has given us a new unique URL address, www.youtube.com/C/SaintJohnC. That's SaintJohn and the letter C. You can also follow us and like us on our Facebook page at the address on the screen, or use the link on the homepage at www.anglicaninternetchurch.net. And once you are at the Facebook page, bookmark it for easy return. Or you can now read my weekly blog posts and subscribe to them at https://anglicaninternetchurch.net.wordpress.com. https://anglicaninternetchurch.wordpress.com. Finally, you can request the weekly update, which is a weekly email with the latest news and links to the most recent videos, podcasts, blog posts, and publications. Send your request to be added to me at fron.stjohnanglican@earthlink.net. Please note that the names and email addresses of all recipients of the weekly update are blocked to protect your privacy. You can remove your name at any time simply by sending another email request. If you'd like to speak with me personally about this program or any other subject, please call on my cell phone, 804-559-2690. The best times are 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. If you do not reach me, please leave your name, a message, and a callback number. Until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen. This program has been a presentation of the Anglican Internet Church, and we invite you to visit our website, www.anglicaninternetchurch.net.